CliffCentral.com.
All right, we are live. There it is. Good morning, everybody. It is. It's chilly Wednesday. It's the 5th of May. It is just after 6 o'clock, and you are with me, you're with Sia Sangweni, you're with Michael Flax on a cold morning. I'm okay still. I'm not complaining. The heaters are not on yet. The world is not that freezing. It's you don't need the heaters yet, right? You only need them when it becomes dire, when it becomes a real problem. Am I right, Flax? You're not a weakling.
I completely disagree with you there. I have electric blanket on. I have heaters on. My house is so cold. I'm looking at ways to insulate. I'm looking at getting a carpet.
All right. Okay, so you are a weakling.
And I feel the cold. I don't think I have very good blood circulation. Like, I shiver at times.
Do you? This time of year. It's not even midwinter. You shiver.
And, like, my parents even know this because I went for dinner with them last night and out came the presents. Thermal pants, thermal shirts, long sleeve shirts that are, like, thicker and stuff. They bought me a whole bunch of stuff just to keep me warm. They even dropped an electric blanket at my house. I took out the gas heater the other day because we're not...
You realize how lucky you are to have parents that are so keen to keep you warm and safe in the winter. It's very lucky of you.
I know. I'm very fortunate, and I definitely am grateful every day. I saw this one sign that said if you're still receiving a phone call from your mom and dad, you should be very grateful. Yeah. So I try to be conscious of that every day now.
Well, there's Mother's Day coming on Sunday, so you better have something in return for your mom.
I know. I'm actually going shopping today. What's a good go-to?
Oh, man, I never know. I mean, listen, moms are really hard to buy for because you've got to do birthdays, you've got to do Christmas, and you've got to do Mother's Day. And for me, that's like a lot of thinking. But sometimes you just see something. And what I do is if I see a bunch of cool things, you know, through the course of the year, I'll just gather up in a present drawer. So I've got this chest of drawers. And I've got I've got a whole bunch of options there. Everything from a nice smelling candle to something that's a little more, meaningful. There's a whole bunch of stuff there. And then I just go and dig around in that drawer and I find something.
I think this year is maybe the year of the candles and the bath bombs.
That's not a bad plan ever. Sia, don't you think that it's easier to shop for moms than it is for dads?
My parents are such easy and simple people, so I don't have that issue. And I know they just have a category in my mind for what to get. I know their favorite authors.
Oh, okay.
I know. Yeah. My mother's, she's a person who likes to take tons and tons of notes. Sorry, ruins that surprise. But
I wonder where I wondered where you got that from, but okay, now we know.
And it's so easy as well, since we don't even live in the same city. There's no pressure of, I do have to see you, I have to take you out for breakfast, right. And I have to be, I'm just getting it delivered on Sunday morning.
Well, that's even more hard work to get the delivery done. I mean, if you actually live near your mom or dad, then Mother's Day, you just pop by and you, drop it off. Mm. But for a delivery, that sounds like a lot more work.
It's a delivery and then a call, a FaceTime. Oh, ooh, Mother's Day benefit. It's a FaceTime, not a normal call.
Do you know what would be hilarious? If we started a trend whereby you film your parents opening up their Mother's Day or Father's Day gift, but you get them an awkward gift like lingerie or something.
Oh, no, man. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
I think it would be funny. Imagine their reaction.
No, I don't even want to think about my bra size.
Ooh, no. I'm with Sia on that one.
I went shopping with a girlfriend of mine probably 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and she was particularly looking for lingerie. Have any of you, I'm trying to read the room here.
I know where you're going. Yeah, I know where you're going. Go on.
Have you ever been to a lingerie store before?
Yeah, yes. When I was in America more than once, I went in because I was buying presents for my then girlfriend, and you need to know what you're talking about, man. You need to know sizes. You need to have all the details down. Otherwise, it's gonna be a disaster. And you know, when you're buying stuff at like Victoria's Secret, you don't want to be spending that money and it's not the right size. You're gonna come back and she's gonna look at you and go, "It's beautiful, but it doesn't fit."
Yeah.
There's no guesswork.
No.
Firstly, I'm shocked, legitimately shocked by the price of lingerie.
Sure.
It's a bit of material just for the boobs, just for at the bottom. And then secondly, I didn't know the technicalities of it. So I knew there were cup sizes, but I also didn't know that cup size is determined by how much of the boob spills over. Does it spill over to the front? Does it spill over to the side towards the shoulders? Because you don't want that. Then it
I'll tell you what it is. Sia, in this way, you're fortunate. You never need to know any of this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Because, I mean, you're not going to be buying a sexy bra for some girlfriend of yours. But I'll tell you what you need to do. You need to sit down and do an exhaustive questionnaire with her. So you need to ask her precisely what... You know, because there are two sizes here, as I understand it. And obviously, with three guys talking about bras and things, which is not ideal. I'd prefer if the girls chimed in here and told us what they think. But you have to get the measurement around, which is in inches, right? And then you have to get the cup size. But some girls, as you rightly say, they prefer it a little bit smaller than the cup size they want, or a little bit bigger, depending on their comfort or what they want to show off. And if it's a very, it's a showy bra, then, maybe they want to get it slightly a different size. But you do get variations. And then you also have American and South African differences. So you have to sit there and you have to ask her like 200 questions. And then once
you... Then is it padded or not padded?
Exactly. Exactly. It becomes... No, it becomes a whole... Like, I promise you, it's one of the most difficult things you could buy. Really. If you don't have to, stay away from that stuff. Just because as a guy, you're going to screw it up. And you're going to waste a fortune of money if you get it wrong.
Do you know if it's sold as a set? Like if you're a 36 at the top, then it has to be a 12 at the bottom or whatever, something like that. Can you mix and match?
Yeah, you have to get the right top and bottom. You can't. I mean, this is why it's so easy if you're a dude. I mean, really, like we just... I don't think I've ever thought much about... any of that stuff. I've pretty much been the same waist size my whole life, which is, I don't know how, but somehow it's amazing because I definitely have got fatter and then thinner and then thinner and then fatter, but by a few kilos, never a big deal. And I've had the same size. Like I know exactly what, a 32 around the waist. And, if it's a pair of pants that's off the hanger, then it's like large, just go with those. And if it's t-shirts, large, and then I'm sorted, and that's me done. It's really easy for me. I mean, it's not easy for everybody. And, the more your body changes and the more individual your measurements are, the more difficult it is to shop, man. I always feel, even though we always give fat people a hard time on this show, and we really do, I always feel very sorry for them. They can't just walk into any shop and get what they need. If you're really huge, there are only a few places in the whole world you can actually go and buy clothes. It's hard.
Good point. I never thought of that.
No, it's really tough. So, I mean, a little bit of sympathy, for those people. Anyway, I did want to comment on something quickly. Flax was saying he gets really cold in the winter and, it's boring to talk about the weather, but I'll never forget my uncle saying to me, "We actually live in a cold country with a hot sun." And you can feel that because when the sun goes down in the evenings or when it comes up in the mornings, that's when it's really cold. Even in summer, the twilight, the dusk and the dawn are quite chilly. We are quite far south on the globe. If you're closer to the equator, it's pretty much warm all the time. But the further you are south or north, and we're the most southern in Africa, the less those twilight hours are pleasant in terms of people like me who like the heat. So I don't blame you, Flax, for shivering and being a bit of a weakling. I think I'm going to get my stuff. I've already put it all out, heaters and things. I mean, it's only, it's two heaters in my whole house that I bother with. I do make fires in the winter. I've talked about that before.
Ooh,
that's my favorite
thing. That's nice.
Yeah, I've got an actual fireplace, so I light that up nicely in the winter. But, man, you burn through wood, hey?
do you research like the wood you buy and like you want this and dry wood supplier, you get a truckload in?
Well, if you, if you're really interested in this, I mean, so I did do a little bit of work on it, but my brother found a guy who supplies really, really good hardwood, which is the stuff that you should use for braai. And, you know, it burns the longest and it's heavy. It's like, you know, it's beautiful wood and it's ethically farmed and all of that stuff, but you pay. I mean, you really pay for it. So
yeah,
it's expensive and, you know, you can burn through bags and bags and bags of wood in a winter season. So I'm trying to only make fires when it really counts. And I haven't done one yet, but I'm going to start probably maybe this weekend. I've got no plans for the weekend. I'm going to maybe keep the fire going through the day on Saturday. If it's cold, I'll look at the weather report and have a look. But heaters, I've got two, and then I've got the electric blanket on the bed, but I'll only switch that on when it's absolutely necessary.
What heaters, gas or electric heaters?
Electric ones.
Oh, we're not allowed to use electric in our house. They use too much electricity.
Yeah, too much power. No, it's a serious thing. I mean, like, I've thought about that too.
Yeah.
And dude, let me tell you, I was reading this fascinating book over the course of the last few days about how it's by someone who's been on our TV show. Sia, you know him too, Marion Tupi. He's the guy from the Cato Institute, and he's got that Twitter account called Human Progress, right, which is absolutely amazing. So Marion's just done a beautiful book, and he sent me a copy, and it's incredible. It tells you about how actually now is the best time to be alive, which is something I've often said, and why living as a human being in 2021 is by all measurements a better experience than any of your ancestors would ever have had. And regardless of all the problems we have, compared to every kind of human who's come before you, we live pretty damn well. And the reason I bring up his book is because the two things that he says have become more expensive since the 1970s and 80s. There are only two things that have become more expensive. TVs have become cheaper. Computers have become cheaper. Everything's become cheaper except for these two things, healthcare and education. Just healthcare and education have gone up in value. You know why? Because it's being gamed by the system. So, you know, if you go to the doctor and the doctor says, do you want to have one blood test just for the thing I'm looking for, or do you want to have the whole thing? And you're like, well, my medical aid will pay, so I'll have the whole thing. So we all have a role in making our healthcare more expensive rather than cheaper. And the insurance companies are part of it. And there's lots of complicated reasons why it's more expensive. And education, in terms of certainly tertiary education, and the fact that education is becoming more of an elite thing, you know, it's about where you went to school or about where you went to university. And a lot of degrees people are studying are useless and not particularly applicable to the real world. So those are two reasons that they've become more expensive. But they're the things that he says, you know, the prices have been artificially inflated. The thing he warns about in the book, and he says, you know, despite all of these things, you know, health and peace and democracy and relative happiness and wages and all of that stuff's going up. But he said he thinks that what will happen in parts of the world that haven't already dealt with this, and we're dealing with it at the moment, is that energy will become hugely expensive. And that is why it's a good idea to be a little bit schnorrer about your electricity usage, because that will, it's so expensive now and it's just going to keep going up.
Yeah, we found a little hack that we reload electricity at the start of the month and you get more bang for your buck, apparently.
Oh, okay. What, you guys on a pay-as-you-go type situation?
Yeah, we have a little prepaid meter, and when you fill up at the start of the month, you get more kilowatts than if you had to buy the exact same amount in the middle of the month. I have no idea why or how, but it just is.
I've not heard of that.
Okay. Well, listen, there may be a tip in that. We've all got to share these bits of information. Maybe we save a bit of money, you know? Anyway, so Flax.
How does that make you feel about the future, though? Sorry, just on those three things, energy, education, healthcare. We kind of can't avoid healthcare. We all need it. Mm-hmm. Education, debatable because it's changing, and some, you know, the free courses and whatnot. And then energy. unless you're planning on living off the grid, you're also still going to have to buy into it.
So
energy.
Yeah.
Energy is going to change to solar. It's like happening already, and coal is going to be phased out. Solar is much cheaper because you're now getting it off the sun, and you just got to pay once off infrastructure costs.
I do think that technology will come to the rescue on that front, but I also think that we've got to individually, because if we rely on the government and on state-owned enterprises like Eskom to provide us with energy, we're going to be in trouble. So anybody who has any extra money, if you can save any money, that money that you might save or invest might even be better spent on making yourself energy independent. And I know lots of people. I was talking about this on the show just the other day. In fact, we've got listeners of ours who are involved in this business where they help you put solar panels in, they help you run your geysers off solar. They can cut down your electricity usage by like four-fifths, so that you're only paying Eskom a fifth of what you're paying them now. Now, that's clever.
Whoa.
Because in the long run, you'll save more money there than you will on investing necessarily. Mm. So, you know, there are pluses and minuses here. But I don't know all the answers. And I mean, I'm just talking about what I glimpsed through, basically paging through Marion's book yesterday. But really, it's a very, very good book. It's called 10 Reasons Why. Let me just look for it quickly, because I know it's worth giving a plug. It's really very good.
Do you know what answer I'm like dying to know, and I really want to know this before I die, is whether the geyser switching it off or on during the day will save you electricity. Some people switch their geyser off from 6 o'clock at night till 6 in the morning,
right,
and then switch it back on and say they save electricity.
No.
But in my head, I'm thinking you're reheating the geyser
exactly.
Now, so you're not.
No, that apparently is not. Here's the book. That's what the cover looks like. And it's called 10 Global Trends Every Smart Person Should Know, and many others you'll find interesting. So it's by two authors, Marion Tupi, who we've had on the show, and Ronald Bailey. 10 Global Trends Every Smart Person Should Know. It's really good. Okay. Really, really good. And by the way, it'll also help you when you end up in an argument with an idiot who says to you, the world's getting worse. It's definitely harder to be alive now, and it's much, much more difficult to be, you know, human being in 2021 is suffering a lot more than their bullshit. It's really not true. It's really not true.
This world's definitely an easier place to live now.
Oh, but you know what? I mean, how often do you actually find something that's going to make you feel good? Because after reading this book, I'm just looking through it. I didn't even read it properly, but I will. Just looking through it, I'm like, wow, the world is actually getting so good, and we're going to get even better unless we make really stupid decisions.
Look, I had something that made me feel good. I timed my bath yesterday perfectly with my dinner delivery.
Nice.
I put in the hot water. Mm-hmm. Look at exactly how far the delivery person is.
Mm-hmm.
Time it to know when they're entering the complex. Then I rinse off. I bundle up. I know when he's walking up the stairs. And just after being in a warm bath, I have a warm meal. Come on. That's something good.
Tell me that is so perfect, because there is no one, even the best person alive in 1690 couldn't have wished for what you just explained away there. So listen to this quickly. Yeah. This is interesting. Tracy says, we have a geyser on a timer with a special geyser blanket on, and I think it saves us quite a bit, but the switching on and off, it can't be good. Well, actually, Bav says, Carte Blanche did an episode on that. Turning off and on the geyser costs more electricity than leaving it on 24/7. So there's your answer, Flex.
Mm, I thought so. We also did the geyser blanket as well.
Hmm. Hey, man, listen, I know it sounds like we're all cheap and we're running around switching things off the whole time, but I'll tell you what, you don't want to waste money. Not now. Nuclear energy provided on a large scale is far cleaner and more cost-effective than solar, wind, or coal. That's absolutely right. But people are, unfortunately, and I blame the environmental lobby for this, people are against nuclear energy because of the, and I can only name three big nuclear accidents in living memory, right? There was Chernobyl, which was in the 1980s. There was Three Mile Island in America, which was also in the 1980s, I think. And then there was
what happened there?
It was, it was,
you know,
It was also a nuclear power plant where things went horribly wrong. And this can happen, by the way, but three out of the millions of places around the world that are dealing with nuclear energy, or at least the hundreds of thousands of places that are. I mean, France is powered on nuclear energy, and France is a fairly forward-thinking place. You know, they're just nuclear energy is cheaper and better and provides more power than any other kind by miles. So, you know, Bob is 100% correct here. I'm not going to argue with him. But the other one was Fukushima. So it was Three Mile Island, Fukushima, and Chernobyl. And obviously they were all three very, very scary. And the repercussions of them going wrong are greater. But we can't even compare the amount of energy that a nuclear power plant provides to... You'd need so many wind turbines and solar panels that you'd have to cover up like a tenth of the Earth's surface with all of that stuff before you get as much power as like five big nuclear stations. So also, sure, it does produce a little bit of nuclear waste, which we have in the past, we haven't been very good at getting rid of that. But we're getting better at doing that too. So it produces... And by the way, it produces the least amount of environmental pollution if there isn't a nuclear disaster. The least, by a long way, too. So let's just think about all of that. You know, it's something to consider. All right, Flax, I just wanted to get, before we go to the headlines, I wanted to get an update on those dogs that you because now you told us about them, and now a bunch of us are following them. And, you know, you've made them a part of our lives, so now we have to... I know. We're so invested in these dogs now. How are they doing?
They are the cutest. So once again, go follow adventure_dogs_Africa on Instagram. Just a quick shout out. So shame. Some sad news. The one had get put down.
No.
Dory was about 17 years old, and he was starting to lose his mind a bit. So my roommates took him to the parents' farm, and they called the vet there, and they said their final goodbyes and buried him in the dog cemetery, which we're going to go visit next weekend, and I'm very excited. And we've got this little like sausage dog thing we're going to take to him and like put on his grave.
So I mean, this is why I wanted you to give an update, because I saw that in the Instagram. But Flax, what's the dog cemetery? Where is that?
So it's on my roommate's parents' farm. It's just like where they'll bury their dogs. I think it's quite cool. Like, I feel like because we live in the city, the way like when your pet dies, you take it to the vet, you never see it again and stuff. You literally have your dog for like years and years and years. It's basically like your child, and you build like an attachment with it.
Sure.
So I believe they should be treated and buried like normal human beings with respect as well. And somewhere that you can go visit. I mean, if the dog could talk, I think you'd feel more bonded towards it. Just because it can't talk doesn't mean that its actions are where you're sort of getting its emotions from now.
We have a family farm, a sort of family graveyard. We don't live on the farm anymore, but it's old. It's got like four or five generations of my family buried there. And in the one corner is like an area for pets, which is quite cute. So I reckon that's probably what we'll do with Carl one day when it's his turn. But it is, it's sweet that you guys have been doing all of this for these dogs. You know, it just, that is really humanity operating at peak emotional connectivity. I like the fact that even though these things can't talk back to us, if you have so much love to give that you can go to the trouble that these friends of yours and you have been going to for these dogs, to prove that humans can not only make the world better for other humans, but they can also do it for other animals. I don't see how anyone can have a problem with that. And I hate those people who come up and say, oh, but, you know, if you can do that for a dog, why aren't you doing that for a human? Well, the fact is, like, why aren't you doing this for a family that you don't know? Why aren't you going to help some North Korean cross the border? That's a ridiculous argument. You have what you have in your life. You know, you can only do for the people and the creatures in your life the best you can. And if you can't even get that right in your immediate circle, what are you busy telling other people what to do outside of that circle? Who do you think you are, you know? Anyway.
That's so true. Like, if you think about, like, when was the last time someone complimented you on being selfless? Like, I don't think we're selfless enough.
No, of course we're not. because most people are completely absorbed in them, in their own lives. They don't think about anything else. I just want to point out quickly, we were talking about nuclear energy. Just so that we're clear, I did not say that nuclear energy is the best for our country because our government would be running it. We would definitely have nuclear accidents. I mean, Tracy said pretty much that. Jason says, you wouldn't want to put nuclear in the hands of the ANC. I completely agree. Muzi even says, we wouldn't want Eskom running a power plant that's nuclear. So obviously, sorry, did I say Muzi? I meant him, CZ, who said we don't want Eskom running a nuclear plant. But you see how cynical our listeners are when it comes to trusting the ANC to do all of this?
I'd trust Elon Musk to handle our nuclear energy.
Yeah. Yeah, I do agree.
I just want him to come here and solve all our problems.
Yeah, I think he's got bigger fish to fry. And one of the reasons he left here is because he doesn't want our problems.
I know, but he would literally solve them in a day.
Sorry, Sia, what did you say?
You can't blame the guy. We do have a bunch of problems.
Yeah. We've got 99 problems, but Elon ain't one.
Yes, because he ain't around yet, that's why.
All right. Do you want to do some headlines quickly? Let's see what's going on. Speaking of the news and 99 problems. Well, Bongani Bongo was talking. Now, you remember who he is. He's the former state security minister. He was probably one of our worst appointments. And trust me, that's a difficult field to win in. He's responded to the Inspector General of Intelligence at the State Capture Inquiry. And he said, he doesn't know whether he should be called to the State Capture Commission. He says, call me, but he's not entirely sure. In his response, he's called for the chair, the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, to call him to testify. But according to him, the only time he met Dintwe, the guy who was giving testimony yesterday, Isaac Dintwe, who was the Inspector General, he has been talking about, among others, Bongo and the Director General of the State Security Agency, which was Arthur Fraser. Fraser, this very, very suspicious and dangerous-sounding man. So according to Bongo, the only time he met Dintwe was when there was a complaint against him by Fraser. Dintwe had allegedly collided with a state vehicle four times under the influence of alcohol. So that we've got these great people running state security. You know, this is our intelligence department. These are the people who are meant to gather information on international threats to the country, on terrorists inside South Africa. You know, really, really important things. And we've got Bongani Bongo, this guy Dintwe, who had been under the influence of alcohol and collided with a state vehicle four times. And then Arthur Fraser, who sounds about as squeaky clean as a swamp. It's just unbelievable. These are the guys who are going to protect us if Al-Qaeda decide to launch a terror attack. Tell me we're not in trouble.
There's no way we are going to know if someone's planning to attack us. We just don't. We'll probably find out 2 weeks after they've attacked us.
Exactly. And we'll go, how did this happen? You know, government, what happened? Bongani Bongo. I mean, please.
We're probing into it.
It's unbelievable.
Presidents will be shocked. At least you know that.
Oh, our president's always shocked, Sia. You know that too. Former Eskom chief Koko is aggrieved by the Zondo Commission gossip. Oh, really? Are you now? You know, between him and what's the guy, Lucky Montana, who was at Prasa, both these guys are so upset that all of us should be saying what fucking morons they are. Well, guys, you are. I hate to break it to you, but the fact that you've appeared in front of the State Capture Commission and have not done anything to improve the idea we had of you before is all you need to know. Former CEO of Eskom, Matsela Koko, started off his appearance before the Judicial Inquiry Commission of State Capture on Tuesday by decrying what he called gossip, which was presented before the inquiry's oral and written evidence. He said all of it was just lies. It's just lies, he says. The subject of Tuesday morning's hearing was to discuss email correspondence between him, Daniels, and others during their time at Eskom, particularly via email. Now, there's been a lot of talk. I'm not going to go into the details of this. If you haven't been watching it, it's not that interesting to get down in the and dirty in the weeds with this stuff. But before submitting his evidence, Corker told Zondo that he was dissatisfied with the platform the commission gave to witnesses to mislead the inquiry without consequence, while there was no recourse other than to present evidence on the same platform. He says, "This is my sixth time today. I must tell you, for the very first time, I'm feeling aggrieved. After the sixth occasion, I have not told my story. I submitted an affidavit to the commission, and on the first day I was told it was taken as read. The way things are going, I do not even see my counsel being given an opportunity to cross-examine me," said Coco. So he's feeling very aggrieved, you know. Poor him.
Who's covering his legal bills? Is it Eskom, us, or his own?
He has to. He has to. But essentially it is us, because he took so much money out of Eskom, which, of course, we're all paying for. That indirectly we're paying for it anyway.
Jeez.
Unbelievable. In other news, that was from News 24, Times Live reporting this morning that an Indian cargo ship has been quarantined in Durban. And of course they're doing this because there's all this panic about India, where they've had a huge surge in cases of COVID. But by comparison with total population, India are not looking so bad. So it's a panic that's almost artificial. And I know that the Indian government are in big trouble and they're under huge pressure from the Indian population, because they've been exporting vaccines rather than maybe seeing that their own people were vaccinated first.
Hectic.
Yeah, so Narendra Modi and the Indian government are under some pressure at the moment. But it's not as if people are dropping dead in the streets of India at an unprecedented rate. I mean, by proportion to population, it is not even as bad as our death rate in South Africa. Remember, we're talking about billions of people in India as opposed to our 60 million. Not all countries are equal. You have to compare the number of cases and deaths to the total population. This is what people are unable to do, because none of us are statisticians, right? And even the statisticians sometimes get it wrong. So if you compare that, I don't know why, but there's this worldwide panic suddenly about India. It's become the biggest story in COVID. And I suppose it's also because COVID is waning everywhere else. Anyway, they've decided they're going to stop this boat, this ship in Durban Harbor, and 14 of the crew have been isolated pending the results of COVID-19 testing. So that's going on in Durban at the moment. And obviously we've had to get our vaccines from other places while India's been dealing with this. Yes, sir.
But that's just a little.
It's just only because I was in an Uber yesterday, and why I also just declutter my mind with a lot of news and a lot of, you know, where are we now, and this whole frenetic energy. And, you know, the Uber driver was playing some talk radio station I listened to. First, they had the open line feature, which is just a glory of a segment.
What a horrible thing to have to sit through, yeah.
complaining. And then I heard a news bulletin where our deaths have just only crossed 54,000 after all of this time. And once you think of it in relation to the country, it is really sad. It's, you know, that people have lost their family members, and, you know, loved ones. But you think 54,000, okay.
So it's not even a full soccer city stadium of people. And I'm of course, we're not just reducing people to numbers here. But unfortunately, if you're going to be in the business of talking about pandemics, then the only thing that matters is the numbers. It's not how you feel. Or if you, I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday whose stepdad died from COVID complications. And that's a COVID death. I'm not going to deny it. I don't think that there isn't a pandemic. I mean, we know this is going on. It's a real thing. But my God, if you're going to talk like this, then let's look at the numbers, because that's the only way we'll get an indication of whether or not we're doing badly, whether we're doing well, whether it's a crisis, whether we're coming out of the crisis. And frankly, I see all this talk on the news of a third wave, and it's just fear-mongering. And you know what it is? It's the media looking for ratings. It is not the truth. Most people are not even bothering. Most people are not even bothering with masks anymore. I mean, I see people walking around. Some of them don't have masks on anymore. The government aren't able to police this the way that they said they would. Nobody's afraid anymore. I mean, even the people who were really, really worried at the beginning of last year, when people were nervous as hell. Even those people are starting to ease off the accelerator in terms of their fear.
Yeah.
And rightly so.
Well, look, I wonder what's going to happen now as we're going into winter. We might have a normal flu season, which might get a lot of people panicky.
We're already on track for that. I just came off like a viral infection. That wasn't COVID.
And my closest thing to being around a lot of people right now in this time is going to.
See ya. You're frozen.
Yeah, I think it's good. Wait.
I wish we knew the songs from Frozen that all the little girls in the whole world have watched, because then we'd be able to sing some song whenever we ever see a freezes like that. Yes, you
guys. There's that Let It Go song. So mom met an American last week in South Africa, mm-hmm. and she was telling me that the American refused to wear a mask after everyone told them to wear masks mm-hmm. because they had been vaccinated in America. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that. If you're vaccinated in one country, should you be allowed not to wear a mask anymore or in other countries?
I just think that isn't the point of the vaccine that you are now no longer able to pass this on to other people or get sick yourself, in which case, why should you bother wearing a mask? Then it just becomes a performance. So if you've been vaccinated and you've got your certificate, and that's the point of the vaccine, is to immunize you and to stop you from being a spreader, then why should you have a mask? Why are we still doing this?
True.
I had a huge argument with Damon about this. I said, if you're telling people to get vaccinated, but they still have to wear the mask, what you're really doing is telling people, whether you get the vaccine or not, you're still going to have to wear the stupid mask and have your life, you know, thrown up in the air. So if you want people to wear to get the vaccine, tell them that after you've got it, you don't have to wear the mask anymore, and then they'll go and get it.
Problem is, how are you going to know who's telling the truth and who's lying?
Well, I mean, listen, how do we know that people how do we know that people's masks work or not? We don't. They could have these huge gaps on the sides. They wear it with their nose sticking out. What the hell difference does that make? Please. You think people
drop off talking about COVID. Never mind, I'll keep quiet now. Yeah, how is that being?
I know.
China listening to me.
Were you going to blame what? Were you going to blame China? Is that what you were going to do, Sia? Is that why they cut you off?
No, I'm not going to say a thing. I love the weather. Do you love the weather? I love eating apples. Do you like apples or mangoes? Yeah, let's talk about that now.
Have you also picked like your favorite mask, and that's your mask for life? Like mine are those blue ones from Diskin. Love them.
Yeah, those are good because you can just throw them away when they get. You've worn them more than once. Look, I don't want to talk about these masks like they're going to be a part of our life forever, because I don't want them to be. And I'm not one of those people who wants to put these stupid things on for the sake of performance. I'm pretty sure I had COVID. I haven't been for the test. But if they say to me, you can get the vaccine and you won't have to wear a mask, or you can carry on wearing masks forever, I'll get the vaccine. Thank you very much. That's all I have to say.
My friend got the vaccine yesterday, and she messaged me this morning, and she was like, she felt like absolute dirt. Like she was shivering all night. She wasn't well. She was up. Apparently it's a thing. Like if you've had COVID and you get the vaccine, you feel like very bad that night.
Well, apparently we're not allowed to say that. You because if you say that, then you're an anti-vaxxer. You're a denier. And listen, there are a bunch of, it seems to me there is a concerted effort by certain places and people and organizations to just not discuss anything except the government line on this stuff. And I'm just not prepared to have a debate right now about it. I mean, I don't want to argue with you guys because it seems like we're all on the same team on this issue, but I'm not that interested actually. Let's just get over this. I think COVID is on the wane. I think South Africa is coming out of it now. We've got to rebuild our economy. We've got far more important things to focus on. Do not start talking about a third wave until it's broken, because how do you know? How are you predicting that? What, are you just going to thumb suck that there's definitely a third wave coming? Show me some evidence. There is none. So I don't believe any of this crap. Anyway, lots of other stuff to get to this morning. I've still got some headlines to tell you about. Thousands of Afghans have fled their homes as fighting erupted after the U.S. pulled out. This is not surprising. Thousands of Afghans have abandoned their homes. Fierce fighting erupted between government forces and the Taliban in the southern province after the U.S. military began withdrawing its remaining troops from Afghanistan. Afghan forces pushed back against insurgent attacks on multiple checkpoints in the past 24 hours in the province of Helmand, where the U.S. military on Sunday handed over a base to the government forces as part of its formal pullout that began on May the 1st. About 1,000 families have had to flee their homes to escape the fighting. So, I mean, what do you do? Does America have to keep on babysitting the people of Afghanistan forever? Or is it time for them to pull out? And have they pulled out in the right way? And did they do this as a knee-jerk reaction? Because for the last four administrations, they've said, oh, no, we're definitely, sorry, the last three. George W. Bush. No, it is the last four. George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and now Joe Biden. Oh, no, we're going to keep troops there. What, forever? Americans must go and risk their lives to keep Afghan people safe? Rather let the Afghanistan government start doing its job. Or the Afghan government must become the Taliban, frankly.
I'm sorry, I wasn't mature enough to have that conversation.
What were you doing?
I caught on to that as well.
They pulled out in the right way. They pulled out three times before it.
Yeah, all right. Oh my God.
We're so
adult on this show. And of course the trial of George Floyd's killer Derek Chauvin, which has already ended. Now this guy is he's asked on Tuesday for a new trial because listen to this. One of the jury members, these are the people who decided that he was guilty, came out in the media and said she or he is a Black Lives Matter member and that they did what they thought was appropriate in racial justice terms. Now, there's so much to unpack here, but if someone says that, they are not a free, fair, objective person for a jury. They should never have been on that jury in the first place. And if they lied to be on the jury, said that they didn't know anything about the trial, which is what they should have done at the beginning, and then turned out to have had an ulterior motive, they can't judge another person in that trial then. So this is already a mistrial by anyone's estimation. And the fact that you have to call it racial justice instead of just justice, you don't need to put a word in front of justice. We all know what justice is. Flax takes my shoes. I should get my shoes back. That's what the court of law is there to do, is to institute justice against Michael Flax. You don't need to call it shoe justice. It's just justice. Don't put a governor on that word. You don't need to slide the scale around on something like justice. Justice is just two things that are balanced like this. That's the scale. And that's why justice has to be...
We're so far from seeing an end to any of this.
Oh, no. He'll win the next trial because of all this prejudicial nonsense that has been part of what happened in the George Floyd trial. It's become political instead of about justice. So if anybody talks to you about social justice or racial justice or class justice or economic justice, they're talking shit. Those people can immediately be counted out of a discussion. There are no such things as other versions of justice. There's either justice or injustice. That's all you've got.
Do you know what I hate is, like, cool, justice should be literally, as you say, Gareth, you take my shoes, justice is you give them back to me. But then justice sort of is like just the heading. And then under justice comes in, how long did Gareth have your shoes for? He's had them for this long. Now he actually owns the shoes. I'm like, no, that's not how this world should work. Let's just work on one line, that justice is justice.
Yeah, correct. And remember, the law is complicated, but justice is quite simple. It should be in natural justice terms that everybody is entitled to their own freedoms, especially in free countries, right, where we have rule of law. This is where you've got to say, in a free country, Michael Flax is entitled to own his property and to not have that ownership threatened by anybody. He's entitled to free speech. He's entitled to free movement. He's entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as per Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence. And these are things that we've taken for granted for the last 300 years in the world. And in some places it's been practiced properly, and in other places it hasn't. But we're losing sight of the things that have made us more civilized. I spoke about Marion Tupi's book earlier. And all the things that make the world better today have come from the Enlightenment. without a shred of doubt. Now, if we're going to turn our back on those things, liberal democracy, the free market, free speech, if we're going to turn our back on those, then life is going to get much worse. And you only have to look at a place like Venezuela to see that. If you feel like eating your pets, forget about burying them when they're dead. If you feel like eating your pets, fighting with everyone in the streets, going into crime as the only way to get a job, sure, then turn your back on those things about the Western Enlightenment that have made the world better. Go ahead.
We need to simplify the law. The law textbooks needs to get thinner, and we need to just say, you do this, you go to jail. Not you do this, oh, someone did this 15 years ago, and that's what happened to them. It is what it is now.
All right. Well, we will see. Sia, you're on mute.
The most said word in 2020 and 2021.
isn't that irritating, Sia? That's your first time in a long time, actually.
I know. That's what I'm annoyed. I had a good, clean track record. No, thank you, Michael. I want law complicated. I don't just want any and everyone involved. I need smart lawyers and attorneys and judges involved. Not us. No, thank you. I can't judge the guy around in flip-flops and shorts in the middle of winter to decide on the law.
Well, speaking about judgment, apparently that former Bryanston High sports coach has been acquitted of rape and sexual assault of a pupil at the school. Now, it's very difficult for us to be objective about these things, because I think we're all repulsed by the idea of an adult taking advantage of children in any way. And so people make up their minds before they've actually heard the case. And in this case, it's an acquittal, right? So he's not guilty.
Yeah. And he pleaded not guilty from the beginning to 12 counts, which include rape, assault, and sexual assault. And he was acquitted. It's tough to digest this and not realize that you have been biased throughout this whole process.
Yeah.
Certainly, I'd admit I was biased then, hearing the story, and it broke out when all of these Me Too things were happening, and we had just gotten over Colin Rex at Parktown. So now to hear this, okay, and this is why I've raised this a couple of times before on the show, and I'm very interested to see what happens now. When it comes to redemption, what happens now when it comes to accepting the person back into society again? Where are we in our evolution as humans with that? Because we're very quick to then pinpoint and vilify.
Right. So we jump on that bandwagon and we're all like, yeah, guilty, should burn in hell, go to jail, blah, blah, blah. And then if he's acquitted and found not guilty, how do we reintroduce that person to society? And how do we change our minds about something which the court of law has objectively decided he's not guilty of? You can't then continue to hold those views in spite of the evidence and the fact that a court is, because we've decided the courts are the best way to discover whether or not someone is guilty or not guilty.
And we can't only side with the law when it's beneficial to us.
Exactly.
And I know it's hard because I don't even see myself doing it just yet, and I'm not really directly involved in this. But do I really want to say, hey, so, in the words of Celine Dion, so now I walk to you with open arms. No, thank you.
Yeah, this is very difficult. No. I wonder what, maybe Tracy's right, we should get Sam Cowan in again and ask her, because she wrote that book about the Parktown Boys case, and that was Colin Rex. And I think, you know, talking to her about that was very eye-opening for me and for, I think, many of us. And maybe she's got some points of view on this. Because, you know, again, just like we all know about Harvey Weinstein, we all know about these creeps, Bill Cosby, these famous situations of men who've been, like, rapey and abusive and all of that stuff. But we don't talk enough about the situation where someone is accused of that and then they're later acquitted, because we don't know how to deal with that, right? We know how to deal with someone who's guilty. We can focus and magnify our hatred for them, and we can hope to see them suffer in jail because we know that they've then been found guilty of the crimes they're accused of. But what do we do when it goes the other way?
WAMECO, Women and Men Against Child Abuse, they said in their statements yesterday, because they've been very involved in this whole process, they say an acquittal does not mean someone is innocent, but that the guilt cannot be proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes, but sure. I mean, but then what you're really saying is that you only like it when it goes your way. I mean, you have to have either you believe in the system or you don't. And if you don't believe in the system, then you can't go to court to solve your problems. And you can't only go to court when the result is what you hope it will be, because you can't prejudge that. So again, this is a difficult discussion. This is something really, really hard to talk about.
I feel like now that he's been acquitted, it turns into more of, on his onus, more of like a marketing spin he now needs to do, whereby he should sue for defamation and he should get media statements released through the publication that said the negative things about him, that he has been acquitted and that he didn't.
Then he needs to have huge amounts of money, which he probably doesn't if he was just a sports coach, you know. How's he going to employ the lawyers?
Imagine that the news agencies had to do it for free because they said something negative. They now need to make it a positive.
It'll never happen because positive news news doesn't sell. I love this story, though. This is hilarious. So you know how DJs are always trying to do something interesting on their radio shows? I mean, you know, I've been guilty of this too sometimes. But this guy apparently got a tattoo on his arm in the U.S. He's a radio DJ. And then he got fired. Like he did he get the station's name tattooed on his arm or something, and then he got fired a week later?
He actually deleted the tweet because I wanted to show you guys the photo of this. He deleted the tweet after a while, clearly, of course, not proud of what he had done. He got the station's logo tattooed on his arm. What a dodo. His name is Mason Shredder, and he tattooed the logo last month, and just less than a week later, he was laid off.
Wow.
He was a DJ on the morning show, and then had to post the photo again of his tattoo and say, oh, hey guys, by the way, I just got fired. Ooh.
That's so embarrassing. So embarrassing. You know what else is embarrassing is I've got to show you this picture. This is hilarious. Apparently the Bidens went to visit the Carters. Did you see this? So former president Jimmy Carter and his wife Rosalind, they're very old. They're in their 90s. I mean, Jimmy Carter's the oldest living president. And Joe Biden and his wife Jill apparently went to visit the Carters at their house at some point, and then this picture was revealed. But tell me what's wrong with this picture, all right? You ready?
Well, there's so much.
So what's wrong with this picture?
They look like twins.
Who looks like twins?
No!
Joe and other dude.
No. Look at the size. Look at the size of Joe, and look at the size of Rosalind Carter. She looks like a Oompa Loompa. Like a hobbit.
No, I do not want to believe that this picture has not been doctored.
It has not been doctored.
Also, look.
This is the official picture that was released by the Carters, not even by the Bidens. What's going on here?
I went as far as going and I saw it was released by the Carter Center officially. But look at the proportion of the Bidens versus the Carters. One of the best comments that had me howling last night was someone calling them a ventriloquist. And I'm like, now, ever since I read that, I can't unsee it.
I can see that now. I can see it.
No, I mean, listen, it's a really bad picture.
But also, look at the...
No, so it's a really bad picture because obviously, you know, you shrink as you get older. I mean, we all know this. You shrink a little bit, but my God, Rosalind Carter looks like Frodo compared to Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Look at that. And Jimmy doesn't look very big either compared to Jill. Jill looks like a giant who's going to eat Jimmy.
Does the proportion of the furniture also not make you speculate?
I mean, those chairs look...
I'm thrown off.
The chairs look normal sized.
Look at the stool next to President Biden. That looks like a normal size stool as opposed to the couch that Mrs. Clark is sitting on. And then look at, see, I analyze this way too much. So sorry, now you guys are involved in it. Look at the size of the paintings in the background as compared to Biden. Everything looks out of proportion. And then are you telling me if President Biden stands up, he will not be taller than whatever piece of furniture that is to his left? No, something is off about this.
Yeah. Something is off. He'll hit the roof.
I love it. It
looks like they are sitting in a dollhouse.
It's really bad. It's very embarrassing.
I loved her dress. She's literally wearing a lemon tree on a dress.
Yes, that's Jill Biden that you're talking about. She's got a lemon tree on her dress. Listen, she doesn't.
That's a full lemon tree.
I got to say, she doesn't look bad. She's, as first ladies go, she's doing a pretty good job in terms of the way she looks. And I can say that because we had a model first lady just before this. She was an actual photographic and ramp model, you know, Melania Trump.
She was a model first lady then.
Well, you think so, Sia. You are a big fan of Melania Trump's, but she certainly didn't cause any trouble. But it is a funny picture because the Carters really, they do look like a totally different species to the Bidens. That's the problem.
Oh.
Anyway, a lot of people are saying, it is a doll's house visit, says B. Agreed, CS says Tony, in terms of the fact that the proportions are all wrong. Hadmin says maybe they have tiny couches because they're so small.
Yeah, I actually thought that as well yesterday. I thought maybe since they're so tiny in their old age, they've just customized their house to be small.
Okay, so
reach the top cap?
Let me be clear, that photo has not been doctored. That was the photo released by the Carters, the two tiny people in the picture. You're telling me they didn't notice that was a bit odd? Anyway.
Did you just reduce the former leader of the free world
to tiny people
and his wife to the two tiny people?
They're tiny people. What can I tell you? That's what
I did also reduce their apologies.
Yes, correct. Reduce them to tiny people. Well, that's what they are, Sia, whether we like it or not. Anyway, it's my favorite picture of the last couple of days. What we've got coming up in the next while is we'll check in with Sean Sanders. Man, is there a lot to talk about with him because Ethereum is just blowing up at the moment. It's incredible. And it's almost like the Bitcoin people are busy staring through the window, seeing what's going on with Ethereum. They've been left out of the room. So we'll catch up on all of that with Sean in the next hour. We'll also catch up with a bunch of other stuff that we've got on our agenda. And to hear what yours is this morning, your agenda, you can let us know. Comment on YouTube and it comes straight up on the screen in front of us. Or you can send us an SMS or WhatsApp on 0797482090. Well, SMS, no, because we don't use those anymore. So it's a WhatsApp. Or yes. you can email us, you know, gareth@cliffcentral.com. We do that too. All right. Lots of things to talk about. I love that Gentle Inflatables says that the Bidens look like giants in that picture. Gentle Inflatables. That's hilarious. Did you make the Bidens for this? Are they actually inflatables? That's what I want to know. All right. We'll be back in a moment or two. Cliffcentral.com on a Wednesday morning.
Cliffcentral.com.